Shiva. We need to look at chapter 3, or are we ready to look at chapter 4?
We only got through the first 9 verses of chapter 3.
Oh, okay. I'll just probably keep track of the details. Yeah. I kind of thought if we'd read a verse in each chapter, that counted. All right, where do we want to start? Ryan, where do we want to start?
Where do you want to start?
I said 4 and I got shot down on that.
The next gap in mine is...
There's only 66 chapters in the book, so...
My next break is at 13.
Yeah, I thought it was weird. I thought we went all the way up to 13 because we were talking about the children are their oppressors and women rule over them. We had gotten pretty much.
All right, so let's start reading verse number 13, and we'll read all the way to 4:1.
Right.
There seems to be an argument as to why that number 4 is there. There's an awkward break.
13. The Lord arises to contend and stands to judge the people. The Lord enters into judgment with the elders and princes of his people. It is you who have devoured the vineyard, the plunder of the forest in your houses. What do you mean by crushing my people and grinding the face of the forest, declares the Lord God of hosts. Moreover, the Lord said, because the daughters of Zion are proud and walk with heads held high and seductive eyes and go along with mincing steps, and tinkle the bangles on their feet. Therefore, the Lord will afflict the scalp of the daughters of Zion with scabs, and the Lord will make their foreheads bare. In that day, the Lord will take away the beauty of their anklets, headbands, crescent ornaments, dangling earrings, bracelets, veils, headdresses, ankle chains, sashes, perfume boxes, amulets, finger rings, nose rings, vestal robes, outer tunics, cloaks, money purses, hand mirrors, undergarments, turbans, and veils.
That's a lot.
Now it will come about that instead of sweet perfume, there will be putrefaction.
Wow,
that's right. Instead of a belt, a robe. Instead of a well-set hair, a plucked-out scalp. Instead of fine clothes, a donning of sackcloth. And branding instead of beauty. Your men will fall by the sword, and your mighty ones in battle. And her gates will lament and mourn, and deserted she will sit on the ground. For 7 women will take hold of one man in that day, saying, we will eat our own bread and wear our own clothes. Only let us be called by your name. Take away our reproach.
All right, Caleb, unpack it, please. Wow.
Rags to riches.
Rags to riches.
Rags.
Yeah. What a description. I mean, you talk about language there. All right, I'll get the conversation started. One thing I've been struggling with in understanding is the Lord rises to argue a case, stands to judge the people. The Lord brings this charge against the elders and leaders of the people. You have devastated the vineyard. The plunder from the poor is in your houses. Why do you crush my people and grind faces of the poor? And I think this is a conversation you and I were having, Evan, is that the difference between the haves and the have-nots globally is not getting better. The gap is not, it's growing wider. There's every measurable metric globally, not even a United States problem, that the middle class is disappearing. And you're either part of the haves or the have-nots. Patrick, you're a world traveler. Is that a fair description? What do you think?
It's usually pretty stark because you have like the have-nots are all the expats that have been from one form or another been brought to this country and so they do all the work. And then if you're part of that like nationality, like Saudi or Emirates or whatever, you just get a month, governmental stipends just like be a Saudi, And then like places like Yemen, for instance, everyone doesn't have anything except for the people that are the corrupt people that are taking it from everyone else. You know, so it's a very small group of haves. But even then, like they're still living in a really, really jacked up country.
Am I wrong to say that the Communist Party is characterized by creating the haves and the have-nots, and the haves are the ruling class, and they hoard it? Sean?
I was actually going to comment on that. What led to a lot of that in the Middle East was Russian influence in the colleges for communists and socialism, and what it and especially in the Middle East, where they have like tribal mentality. One tribe would end up being in charge, and so they would say it's good for us to have all these things, but for everyone else, then you guys have to share things. And so it creates like a massive gap. There's really no middle class.
Just to expand a little bit about what you're talking about, the increase in the gap. So there's a, I can't remember the name of the article, but it was written by a man named Thomas Piketty in 2016, discussing how since 1950, the disparity between the top decile and the bottom decile of wealthier like their own people across the globe has been becoming greater and greater and greater and greater. And throughout history, typically when this gap becomes very great, wars typically come in the wake of it. And even in terms of the causal logic behind that, there's a lot of debate, but nonetheless, I think this kind of lends itself to that, like a very, very tangible topic in political science. Very interesting.
It makes me think of the French Revolution. Mm-hmm.
Which one?
Well,
have and have
not.
Yeah, well, so what I'm asking tonight is, what should I be doing as a born-again believer, follower of Christ, with regard to the gap? What should I be doing? You know, is this judgment that's being rendered, the plunder from the poor is in your houses?
Examine your own ways first.
Okay? What would that look like?
This is not a natural result of people who were just wise with what they did. They were being very unjust in how they were dealing with people in their business and their exchanges, taking advantage of people very unethically.
Okay?
They were haughty. I mean, it talks about the haughty women who, you know, had, you know, an abundance of jewelry and finery and.
Yeah.
First,
Micah, who was at the same time living as Isaiah, was talking also about this in chapters 3 and 4, and the wealthy, the prophets, the priests, all that at this time period were just taking everything away from the poor in the name of the Lord and stuff, and you see it right here, and this is God, and I hate to use the term here, but pronouncing social justice on them, like, the high class will take everything from the poor. I told y'all to take care of the poor. Take care of the widows, take care of the orphans. Okay, you ain't gonna do it, I can take care of all of it.
So what did it actually look like when they took advantage of, so kind of like prosperity gospel is now, was it kind of like the law gospel then, to where they put the Mosaic law on them and had them, I'm curious what it specifically was, how they took advantage of them.
A lot of Micah was, I mean, Dr. Wilson did this in his class, covered Micah before we broke up into these new classes, and one of the things was, hey, well, you know, the money, it really came down to the money, how they were taking the money, instead of actually using it for the further the Lord's word, had their own big banks. They were in deals with the kings of Israel and stuff. That's a simplified version.
And it's also corruption. It's under the assumption, too, that this is because they failed to keep the year of Jubilee and all of that as well as they instructed to do.
Yeah, remind us what that is.
So, was it every seven? It was every 7 years, and then every seven years or whatever. So, 49 years, there was another thing. I can't remember which one was the year of Jubilee, but basically it was. Everybody, if you were a slave, you got released, and if you their land had been sold, went back to the original tribe. I can't remember the last one, but that was a good one.
Would you say, well,
your dad's got a race.
Right. Yeah.
That's only if you were an Israelite.
Yeah.
Right. But at the same time, they were telling you, they were supposed to leave things in the fields. For, mm-hmm. And they weren't doing things like that.
Yeah, that's what I saw.
Let the land rest out here. Mm-hmm. So what, how should I think about that? Should I vote for politicians that are about that? What, how does that apply to the year 2023? What is the application of this as a follower of Christ? What's that mean?
Well, so if you can find one,
okay.
Nations
simply don't care as long as they have money in their bank. They don't care about the morality of their leaders.
I heard an argument that the difference between communism and socialism and Christianity is they both claim to want the good of people, but communism and socialism steal it from other people, and Christianity gives it to people. And the difference is that Christians are willing to give it, but communists and socialists have taken it. So, I mean, all the famous communists and socialists end up being power-hungry people, so I think their testimony of their life is kind of ridiculous. I mean, Bernie Sanders today is probably one of the most famous socialists in the country that has 3 houses in 3 different states, and he's been in government for his whole career. So what does that say about people?
Does it say we're paying our politicians too much, or does it say that there's corruption within the political ranks?
Yes.
Well, definitely.
Yeah, well, Kevin.
I think on a personal level, it probably boils down to not being greedy, but when you get into the political realm, unless you are in a position of governance, I feel like it's a bit more complex. Who knows? Like, what I'm saying, the politician claims to be all about for the people in 3 houses. Who knows who's truly genuine in that?
Is anyone genuine?
I'd say they probably are.
Well, I'll tell you that the ones who are genuine are blackballed and blacklisted, and, you know, they could be there doing the right thing, but all the power hungry, all the bad side just squelch them out and push them away. So it self-perpetuates the bad immorality.
Yeah. I guess my question is, do we think that there's a government solution that's going to make everything good for everyone, or is there going to be gaps and those who have much should be going and trying to take care of those who do not? And especially as Christians, I was reading Luke 12, kind of where it got to the part where it starts talking about storing up treasure and like don't be worried about this and that, and don't seek after the things that the world does, and they should give on. I think there's a requirement for us, believers in the world, to seek out those, especially if we're giving a lot. Those who live us extremely comfortable, what are we doing with all the things that the Lord gives us? Do I need another boat? Or should I be trying to figure out how should I be taking this money and helping folks who, or my time, helping folks who have less than me?
And doesn't Jesus more or less answer this, like, give to Caesar what is Caesar's, what is Caesar's, and give to God what is God's, right? Like, there's things in this world, and I think money and economic situations, all that is one of those. And then there's spiritual matters. You can be spiritually poor, or you can be spiritually rich, and that can be a weak disconnection to your socioeconomic status. You know, and I think that if you, as a Christian, spend your time predominantly trying to be a man or woman after God's own heart and doing what this book tells you to do spiritually, then everything else is going to start. Like, it's going to make a lot more sense. Like, I feel like in that, like, you're probably not going to want another book because you're going to be, I don't know, wanting to do God's will, and I don't imagine God would be like, yeah, you should get another vote. That's what you do.
Yeah.
You know? Like, you'll find better ways to use your time, better ways to use your resources if you are really trying to get after doing kingdom things rather than worldly things. And I think, too, like, I think we start getting down into the idea of trying to make, not that we shouldn't be careful about who we vote for and all that stuff, but
start getting down the rabbit hole of trying to make the government do what we desire it to do as Christians, then we're gonna break the government. We're gonna cause a lot of people to, like, it's not made. I don't think it's made to do that. I don't think that theology is ever going to be the answer, because you have politicians. Politicians exist. You get into that sort of thing, into politics, you become a politician. You know, power corrupts, absolute power corrupts, absolutely. Like, that's a very real thing. You know? And so I think it's if I'm going to vote for somebody, sure, I should be smart with who I'm voting for, but why should I be, am I then trying to, like, divest my responsibility to be a good Christian into, like, oh, well, that's why I put him in the office, to do the things, to do Christian things, so, like, I don't have to, you know? Because, like, they're not going to do it, you know? They're a politician. Like, most likely they're going to be slaves to entirely different virtues and values than what you're trying to do as a Christian.
It is interesting to note how much we see social justice coming up in the Old Testament, though, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, every time we turn around, we're reading a chapter, we're reading a verse, and there seems to be a very clear, God is concerned about the way you are treating people, the way you are oppressing. And I think what makes it difficult is the blur in the Old Testament between theocracy, the government, and the church. It's one entity. In Israel, it's not two entities, and that makes it a struggle. Do you think, as a government entity, that we should be concerned about the haves and the have-nots, Evan?
I don't see that.
So, how do we work that out?
Thank you. I would make the argument that there's limited governance that should be, or laws that should be enacted to prevent outright. Taking advantage of force or situations that cause the middle class to cease to exist, but I think by and large it's more of a just a band-aid. And at the end of the day, our society rests and has rested on an assumption that there's a minimum level of morality amongst the general populace that keeps it the way that it is. And I'm sorry for getting away from that. Like, I think a good example is with all these rental companies buying out large swaths of homes. That is hugely detrimental to, I guess you could call the American dream and middle class. That's probably an area where we could, at the federal level, take action to, I guess, stymie that. I mean, it's, you don't have, like, middle class home buyers who no longer compete and aren't trying to deal with ever do anything but rent.
Are you all familiar with what he's talking about? So entire, just huge corporations are buying up like hundreds of thousands of homes.
Mm-hmm.
So like one company owns 2 million homes, like insane. And the idea is that they'll be able to then control the cost of these things by their sheer ownership. You know, if five companies own 20% of the homes in the nation, that it becomes a monopoly. And so you're saying in that situation, Evan, that is a way that federal laws could break that up.
I'd say that is a situation. I think a lot of times it's just mandate, like a lot of tax laws and whatnot to try to seek to redistribute wealth. I mean, typically those just are gotten around in the long run, and that works a little bit. But there's the home one. The example's also weird. I know that there's I was trying to find it on my phone. There's a weird verse somewhere in one of the prophets that talked about taking land. I don't know well enough to, like, type it in the internet and find it.
Yeah, I was watching a special on the very issue. It was talking about the fact that when individuals own homes and rent them out to individuals, so you own two homes, Caleb, one you live in and one you rent out, that there's a far greater chance that you're going to take care of that family, the rent's going to be appropriate for that family, you're going to develop a relationship with them. It's a much more Christian, love your neighbor kind of scenario than it is you're renting a home from a corporation that owns 1 million homes, you know, on the Southwest. Between North Carolina to Florida, they own 1 million homes. and everything is done in a way to make money for their stockholders. Mm-hmm. And so you basically eliminate home ownership and you put an entire class of people in forever in renting.
I watched the thing, or originally, when I was living in Colorado Springs, there was some gentrification that was happening in the area, and everybody was applauding it because it seemed like it was going to be nicer and all these things that the middle class really wanted, and they thought it was going to be great. And then I watched the thing where it said, I can't remember what year, probably the 30s or, no, it's like the 40s or 50s, where a lot of people used to live inside the city, and then you had suburban America, they all moved out because of the vehicle, and they had these cars, and it was great, and they could do that. But now everybody's trying to move that in, but it's pushing these people who by income could not afford those vehicles and were relying on the inner city buses and things to get around, and they can't afford the homes out there either, and now it's shoving them out there, and they have nowhere to go.
Yeah, that's Detroit. Yeah. What you just described is the city of Detroit. Yeah. And, they all got to where they made enough money to own a car, so they moved out of the city. Mm-hmm. And then so all that was left in the city was the poor who couldn't afford that, and now it became cool to move back into the city, and so the prices have just went through the roof inside the city.
Well, the concern as a parent is how our kids can afford a house someday.
Mm-hmm.
And the cost of housing has just gone up so astronomically. It's concerning.
50-year mortgages in California. 50-year mortgages in California. They're talking about generational mortgages in California. So you buy it, and your son buys it, and the idea being that the second or third generation will have the house paid for.
Well, that's the plan. You'll own nothing. You'll be happy. And that's where we're going. I mean, all this stuff is, the inflation, hyperinflation, milk and everything that, middle class have. Make the richer and more poor. It's all part of the plan.
Yeah,
what you get from an amoral government.
Verse 15 says, "Why do you crush my people and grind the faces of the poor?" What an indictment. I mean, it's such a strong statement. You can't just read over it. "Because the daughters of Zion are hopping, walking with heads held high and scudged up eyes, prancing along, jingling their ankle bracelets, the Lord will put scabs on the heads of the daughters of Zion, and the Lord will shave their foreheads bare. On that day, the Lord will strip there." And then, we have verse 19, 20, 21, 22, 23. I don't even know how the man that did this, or the woman, I guess it was a man, how they decided to break up the verses like that. But instead of perfume will be their stench, instead of belt a rope, instead beautifully styled hair baldness, instead fine clothes sackcloth, instead beauty branding. What am I to do with that? What's my takeaway from that?
What happens in an ancient siege? People will start starving. Their bodies are going to change. They're going to start having malnutrition effects on their bodies. They're not going to have the energy to wear all these heavy ornaments to look good.
And is this God's judgment?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I believe it is. It's their vanity. They're out with vanity.
He's destroying the gods that they're putting their faith in.
Yep.
"Your men will fall by the sword, your warriors in battle. Then her gates will lament and mourn, deserted she will sit on the ground. On that day, seven women will seize one man, saying, 'We will eat our own bread and provide our own clothing. Let us bear your name, take away our disgrace.'" What's happening in that verse?
All men are dead.
Some of this sounds like what happens when corruption happens in a country, and the people who are hit the worst in those kind of situations are women. And it's not just that they are torn apart by war or sick or whatever. They are severely mistreated. And it looks like it's to a point where the only way that they can recover from that, and they're seeking the only way they can recover from what has been done to them in a situation like this. And it is then paired with the war as well and the battle, which sounds a lot like what happened in the Middle Eastern countries.
But it doesn't sound to me like the women are being mistreated here. It sounds like he's exacting judgment on the women who are haughty and vain and you know, they're the ones that are, you know, I'm not saying that women mm-hmm. weren't mistreated, but I think in this particular case, God is...
What's the scenario in verse 1? What's going on in verse 1? Well, Pastor, in this day and time, the woman saw herself for value as a means of having children.
Yep.
And so they wouldn't be able to have it if it was a 7-1 ratio.
Yeah.
So, I mean, their statement is, we will provide our own bread and provide our own clothing. Because the guy says, I can't afford what?
Right.
I can't afford 7 wives. Right, I can't afford it. So what's their retort to that?
No, we'll take care of that. Just take it.
Yes.
Give us a child so that we have somebody to take care of us later.
Yeah, that's the reproach that they're talking about there, taking away the reproach. Is so the male population has been devastated by through what?
Verse 25.
Yeah, verse 25 says, your men will fall by the sword, your warriors in battle. Then her gates will lament and mourn. Deserted, she will sit on the ground.
I think I remember after World War II, Japan was recruiting men to come to Japan so that they could produce children. Because so many men had died, there were no replacements. So they were, maybe the reproduction count went down to zero.
Right. Has anyone seen any of the numbers yet in Ukraine as to the number of men that are dying in Ukraine yet?
Depends on what you listen to, but
it's significant, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think anyone's making a concerted effort to give us exact numbers, because I think it would be too demoralizing for it to be revealed.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there's also an argument that I've heard about Russia is doing some of these things because they're about to go through, they're like on the tail end, or I guess the beginning of the dive into a population crisis, basically because how many men that got killed in World War II and the generational effects, like every however many years, there's just the reproduction rate in Russia just dive bombs, and it's been getting worse and worse. And there's less and less people, and it's reaching a point where their society is like, it's not going to be able to handle it anymore.
Sure.
And you can look at it and you can know it, and so maybe that's, I've heard an argument that that's actually why they kick this off now, because maybe then they're not going to be able to in the future.
Wow.
And then when you look at the numbers of Russians, again, depending on what you subscribe to, they've decimated their culture for this decision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, anything else in these verses before we push on? Chapter 4 is very long.
I think that generally kind of, you know, it's, the whole the headdresses and all that stuff, like it's talking about the decadence of society that is, you know, decayed to a point where it doesn't have any values, it doesn't have any goals, right? And I think that we can draw a lot of correlations over to where we're at now and other parts of history. But also I think like the call for social justice, it's all like we also need to be careful that because like the very policies that would make you think, okay, cool, these guys are going to take care of the poor and all that stuff, right, for instance. Well, those are the exact policies that are keeping people, right? So it's like California, for instance. They make it so friendly to homeless people that they're actually not doing anything for the homeless, and they're just inviting them in, and they're basically creating this perpetual homeless class, and they don't care because they know that that gets them into power by saying those things, getting people to vote for them, go out and, you know, well, we're giving them free things, right? And then someone that doesn't really think a lot about it thinks, oh, that's a good thing, and they sort of like get their, you know, their sticker for the election cycle or whatever, right? But it's actually not doing anything. It's making the problem much, much worse. You know, so there's a difference between I don't think that we shouldn't pursue responsible laws, but we should also pursue responsible laws and not just pursue...
Well, you are confusing me. Because a few minutes ago, I wanted to dig into this subject, And you're like, well, I don't know that we should even think about this as a follower of Christ when it comes to voting. But you're wrestling with exactly what I'm wrestling with, yeah, which is the effort to eliminate the have-nots is perpetuating the problem.
Right. Well, and I didn't say that.
No, I know you, but I didn't. Like, it seemed like you were kind of didn't want to really dig into it.
Yeah. I think that it's very easy for us to kind of get ahead of our skis and start thinking with our, like, you know, I don't know, for lack of a better term, I don't mean anything like this, like, start thinking with like bleeding liberal hearts, right, about it, over actually pursuing what's really a responsible law, right? It's too easy to go, like, a politician can tell you whatever to get in office. I can go and find plenty of politicians that are going to tell me all the things I want to hear about taking care of the poor. But when you actually see the effects of their policies, it's disastrous for the poor.
Sure.
Right? So, like, we still have to practice discernment. We still have to do all that as Christians. But I think if we predominantly focus ourselves on becoming better Christians, all of those other, our ability to pursue responsible laws, responsible decisions when it comes to that sort of realm, that sort of, I guess, secular sort of realm, secular government, it's going to be a lot more clear for us, because we're going to be a lot more in tune with the will of God, right? First is trying to make government God and make government take care of all the problems that we should actually be taking care of as Christians. Like, we should not be giving the government our responsibility to take care of the poor.
But what poor can we take care of, Patrick?
I mean, I think with how many Christians there are in America, for instance, and how many churches there are, there's plenty of ability, there's plenty of resources out there that way.
So, but what does that look like? You know, like, for example, what could Berean Baptist Church do to help eliminate the homeless population in the city of Fayetteville? What could we really set about a 5-year plan to tangibly impact the homeless population in Fayetteville, or are they in a perpetual cycle that we can't pull them out of? Go ahead.
So I guess my question would be, is that actually a goal? Because Jesus said you will always have clothes. You'll always have, they're always going to be here. So I would think that that would be.
But in the context of that text,
I understand it is a different context, but he did still say it. The poor are always going to be here.
But wasn't that the context of anointing him versus giving that money to the poor?
Right. But that's what we're talking about, right? Like, how do we use our resources as Christians to take care of poor people?
The Durham Rescue Mission has a fantastic model.
Who does?
The Durham Rescue Mission.
Right.
To where they actually have they've been doing it for decades, but they have a women's home and a men's home, and they bring them in off the street, and they have a discipleship program. They provide them health and food, education, job placement, as well as a church placement and growth. It's like a complete whole program.
Right. I wonder if Durham has seen a decrease, though.
But you got to have a government that, you know, that governs on moral society. I mean, it's like, you know, giving to the poor and everything else. I mean, a lot of these food pantries now, it's like where people used to make baked goods and go in there and all this stuff, and you got to have it in a wrapper. So government is choking out churches and those people who want to do good. If you don't have a government that enables it, vices constrains it. I mean, then, I mean, we're fighting uphill battle.
I think there's also a phenomenon that happens in these situations in which we see how bad the government is, and it deters believers from stepping up and trying to get into positions that they can help with that from within the government as well. Like we said, like, I don't know if any of us would advise our kids to run for a position of office in the government, because we see how corrupt it is. But by doing that, not having people wanting to do that, then we just leave it to those who are corrupt and there's more that take over, who would go a different direction than we think they should.
Well, and what would our goals be as a church? Would it be to see more homeless people saved, or would it be to see more homeless people increase in a paper effort or something? you know. I feel like one thing hits the other, right? If we pursue the spiritual health of these people, it's safe, right? If they come to know the Lord, that's like the end all be all, mm-hmm. right? And B, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Right, like if they can enter into a relationship with God and start to get straight in that way, like I feel like that's going to let them to figure out a lot of other things. And with the guidance of the church, with the guidance of people, you know, us using our resources and our time and everything like that to be there for those people when they're going through these steps, you know, kind of sound like what you're talking about, like that's. To me, even if it's by the ones or it's by the many, you know, I feel like that's up to God if we can actually move the needle at all or not. Like that's a God thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but if we just focus on actually doing it according to the word, you know, then you know, God can take care of us. But if we can bring a few people to, you know, if they can come to know the Lord, right? And like that's the number one goal.
Yeah, I think that we're into a Gordian knot. When you talk about that, it starts with the family, as far as I'm concerned. If we are at the point where we're always trying to give our kids more than what we had and let them start depending on us to do it, they're never going to stand up and walk for themselves. How are we going to get around it? I don't have the slightest idea, but I look around at all of the families that I know, and we run into that same problem over and over again. Kids, we train our kids, we want to protect them, but then when they turn 18, 19 years old, we want to throw them out of the house, and they don't have any idea how to manage a house.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're just sitting back waiting on us to die,
mm-hmm.
so they can go through the money, and then what have you lived for? So we've got to get back to the moral issue that we're talking about. We've got to have, as a church and as a family, you know, we can't look at what Dorman's doing. We've got to look at what we can do. And I think we need to start by better training our kids and understanding the peer pressure in which they're living. You know, everybody's waiting on somebody else to do everything and nobody does anything. Everybody's job is nobody's job. You got to own up to the fact that we've got to do better as a church, as a Christian, and as leaders of the family.
Right, so does someone know of, and I don't want you to say it right now, don't misunderstand what I'm saying, but like within our own congregation, is there a family, is there a scenario where we could be a help without it being an enablement? Because that's always, yes. In my view, the struggle.
Yes.
Is
it not?
Is what?
It's the Gordian knot. Not encouraging, but supporting.
Right, so we're perpetuating the poverty,
yes.
Because of the handout, so then there's no encouragement to go the distance and break the generational poverty, because typically that's where it's at, is generational.
Mm-hmm. So in Deuteronomy 24,
18
to 22.
All right, Deuteronomy 24.
God basically gave us a command to do. So I'm thinking,
hold on, let's get there.
Like Patrick said, it's not our job to determine what God will do with it. He just gives us a commandment to do. Deuteronomy 24,
yep.
17 to 22.
Okay.
You shall not pervert justice due to the stranger or the fatherless, nor take a widow's garment as a pledge. But you shall remember that you were a slave in Egypt, and the Lord your God redeemed you from there. Therefore I command you to do this thing. When you reap your harvest in your field and forget a sheaf in the field, you shall not go back to get it. It shall be for the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow, that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hands. When you beat your olive trees, you shall not go over the boughs again. It shall be for the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow. When you gather the grapes of your vineyard, you shall not glean afterward. It shall be for the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow. And you shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt. Therefore, I command you to do this thing.
So that's excellent. That's really...
You should do that rather than worrying about it.
Plus it requires them to as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, that... I mean, that... when I was reading that, you think about, and you forget a sheep in the field, do not go back and get it. But a sheep is useless to a person if they don't pick it up and use it to cut something, if it's just laying there, right? Okay, so when my guys drop a string trimmer off one of the trailers, do they stop the truck and go get it and put it back on there, or do they leave it for someone to pick it up and then take it to the pawn shop and sell for $100 to buy more drugs?
Well, of course you need to take care of your tools.
Right, but this, in the Deuteronomy passage, if I forget that my sheep is in the field, I leave it. Go ahead, Caleb.
But at the same time, the culture knew that they could go there, mm-hmm. as opposed to just randomly finding things on the side of the road. People knew, the poor knew that they could go there.
Or you could give them skills to do stuff with and earn money on their own.
Yeah, and this is what I was asking earlier, which is, do we even think about the governmental policies of the politicians that we're supporting? Are these government policies encouraging perpetual poverty, or are they working diligently to get people out of generational poverty? Because you think about, for example, you were born to a homeless couple in Los Angeles, which has the largest homeless population in the United States. We are going to have, if we don't have already, three generations of homelessness. Mm-hmm. You're going to literally have a scenario where your mom and dad are homeless and your grandparents are homeless. If we don't already have it, if that isn't already existing, we're only a few years away from that because of the length of time that people have been homeless in Los Angeles. Go ahead, Quinn.
So, I wonder if it's... I don't know, it's going to take a long time to fix, I think. But I think simple things is really financial education, because they're not getting it in schools. There's a guy who started working for one of the businesses my dad's in back, and he came up and was talking to my dad about how something was up with the paycheck because he didn't have a bank account. He was getting paid directly and going directly to check cashing service. Because no one in his family had ever used a bank before. And this guy is 20 years old,
right?
18, 19, 20, somewhere in there. And so just the difference of not understanding simple things of how banks work leads to this, where you never have a bank account, you have no means to go buy a house, you have no means to get any rent because no landlord's going to give you access to a home. And so I think simple things like that as a church that we can do is we can invite homeless people in to have financial classes. I don't know. It's something I've seen in my life that I've seen one of the guys I grew up with who came to my youth group, who's all his family, he grew up, his great aunt raised him, all his uncles were on welfare and just told him to stay on welfare. But then this guy, when he went and got a job, they would steal all the money that he had. So he went and got a bank account, put all the bank account in there, and then worked his way to, or went to college, used student loans to get there, and paid off $50,000 of student loans inside of 10 months. So, because he was working 60 hours a week. So, it's not a lack of opportunities, it's showing people the options that are there and getting them to work. And I don't know, maybe that doesn't solve the problem, but it solved his problem. And so, having people who are motivated and looking for help, and starting with those people, I think is maybe something to start.
Pastor Sean, real quick. I did look up where it said the sheaf. It's according to the concordance, it's like a fallen row of grain, not a tool in this case. And I think it's interesting because this also ties with roots. But I did see it was in Tennessee. There's these guys with these giant cornfields and everything like that. And they said, they told her, this was right around 2008, the bubble collapse, and they said, do not, when you go through, don't go through and take everything, don't come back, just leave it. And then they let it know, it was like a news article that went out and said, if you are hungry and you are starving, come out here and you, whatever you pick up is yours, don't take it and use it to sell to other folks, but just take it for you to eat.
I've heard of restaurants doing that when they have leftovers,
instead of
throwing them out.
Growing up, that's when we always got sweet potatoes. I'm from North Carolina, and I've shared this before, but sweet potatoes are one of North Carolina's biggest crops. And so where I'm from, it's perfectly understood. I grew up an hour from here. That once you see the farmers go through and pick the sweet potatoes. You have 2 or 3 days until they disk the field after, and so we would go out and get sweet potatoes, and that's how we did. I mean, we'd take them, and that's what we would eat, sweet potatoes for the year. Like, well, we would, our youth group would go and get them, and we'd take them to food shelters as well. So that's still a thing. At least where I grew up, that was a fairly common thing that everybody did.
But then you have restaurants that don't do that though, because then it opens them up to liability in case someone just, you know, they go on and they claim they have food sickness and they sue the restaurant, right? And then it's like,
well, that's a scenario, Patrick, where our government is working to our disadvantage in those situations.
That's fine.
Where laws could be enacted to protect entities from being frivolously lawsuits, and that's what, and like you said, it's a band-aid. Sure, it's a band-aid, but at least we're doing something. I'm frustrated with the lack of anything. Like, when was the last time good legislation was passed by the Congress that had any legitimate, real change?
Well, if you keep people enslaved to a top, the government's handing out, like, you know,
right,
that keeps them on and keeps their voters. I mean, that sounds like.
But how many churches across the United States are taking scripture like we're doing tonight and then trying to seek application in the year 2023? In other words, this is what the Word of God says. This is the year we're in. Now, what am I supposed to do with this? How am I supposed to think through this? What is the... Do I vote for a Democrat? Do I vote for a Republican? Do I vote for someone who's going to give a handout? Do I vote for someone who's going to insist that work is necessary? Who do I vote? How do I work through this? What can I legitimately do? Because if we're not doing that with Scripture, what's the point of reading it?
I know James says, if you don't say you love God if you're not willing to give them the clothes they need and the food they need. And I was just thinking about that figure stuff I do in the gospel. He doesn't even say that here. He says you need to meet their needs.
Mm-hmm.
And don't try to give them the gospel. It's the whole saying, they don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. Kind of thing. So they need food to live, they need clothing.
And to me, that's the difficult piece.
It is.
Because when we take care of the family pavilion on Saturday, so I'm over there a lot. And the homeless population that you see with the cardboard signs comes in on mopeds. They come in on mopeds. They come zipping into the thing on the mopeds, and they put their moped in the bushes, and then they go get their cardboard sign and sit down and stay there in place. Okay? So they're very capable. They're physically able. They're driving a moped in.
I see some with cell phones. I'm like, oh, there's a cell phone.
The government gives them those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the government gives them the cell phone.
Oh,
yes.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And I don't have a problem. Right? I don't have a problem with that handout. Because how are you going to get a job? How are you going to actually do it without a cell phone in today's world? It would be, I mean, applications are made on apps now. You know, how do you find jobs through apps? How do you communicate with your boss through apps? These are, in my view, very tangible things. I think you had a hand, Evan. And, no?
No, I was going to say that it seems as though a lot of the churches almost reluctant to address the application of the politics. And our guest is even taking out policy that exists as well elsewhere too. And I think it stems from this perverted view of separation of church and state, which we'll talk about. But very kind of disheartening to see, I guess.
Yeah, I think the other thing is it's concerned that you'll split your congregation.
Mm-hmm.
That you'll identify political alliances in your congregation, and people will find out you're a Democrat or they'll find out you're a Republican, and then they don't want to have anything to do with you. That our love one for another as brothers in Christ is not strong enough to allow us to have a different opinion on how to solve a problem. I'm listening.
Okay, thank you. So when I was in China, there's a church from, I think it's from Canada. They went to China to help the poor people and the disabled people to make their own living. So the pastor, telling a story, said one of the days a very rich man and by there's a beggar who is begging money. So the pastor said, I'm not going to give you money. I'll give you a little piece of wood. I'll teach you how to make a pencil. And so, first beginning, the beggar wasn't happy because usually people just drop money and it is true. So the rich man said, you need to learn this. Then you don't need me anymore.
Right.
So teach him how to make them the pencil. And a couple days later, and they discussed, and so he went there to buy the pencil. He will pay for $1, for example, $1 for one pencil, and he will pay for 1.5 to pay to buy the pencil. He doesn't need the pencil, but he still buy it. Several years later, the guy became a pencil producer. So he went to say thank you. So that the idea was this. So they went to a very poor place and to help those disabled people, because usually people just gave money to them. They became more physically, mentally disabled. So they brought some like a leather.
Yes.
And to teach them how to make a leather Bible cover or leather little wallet. Thing. And then they purchase from them, and then they sell to overseas magnets.
Right.
So it gives them the dignity, so they feel like they work and gain the money and fulfill who they are. And
right. So my question is, what politician do you know of in either political party that's talking about things like that?
Really? None of them are. So they're concerned about their own agendas and things like
that. Doesn't get you reelected. Short term.
Yeah. Honestly, who wants a job where you have to every 2 years, every 4 years,
bring it back?
You know, that's not a very stable. And a lot of people, I mean, you want stability for yourself, for your family, and who wants to have to go through the mud every 2 years, 4 years, and convince people all over again, start all over again.
Don't they get paid for life after that?
Not every position.
Doesn't the Senate always get paid once they're out?
The Congress does. The Congress and both of them do, yeah.
And the president.
It's all the money they make on the side.
The most of it is in the state level. Yeah. And if that, those politicians don't get paid on that. I mean, one of the nurse practitioners that worked with me, her husband got elected to the state house for a couple terms and really tried really hard to do the right thing. And in one of the re-election cycles, one of the other guys decided he wanted his spot, and so he just slanted him out in public, and all of a sudden his career was gone. And this guy was a military guy. He really worked for the best. He really worked on trying to do renewable energy and a bunch of really positive things, but he just got, one guy, one group just got him and did this whole
slandered.
This whole career trying to help others in that way.
Yeah.
It seems difficult to talk about the church helping everyone else when we give 5% of our church tithes. And then we talk about helping everyone else, and we can't even do what we're supposed to do. 95% of our church can't give to the Lord, but we're trying to fix all the other things. I mean, that's a bad way to look at it, but
it's easier to explain what other people are.
Serve Christ first, and then the rest.
Sure. I would say at a bare minimum, my takeaway, or what I would ask you to take away, is, do I know a family in Berean that we could help? That's what I'm always thinking about from a shepherding perspective. Is there a family in Berean that could use help, not in an enabling perspective, but in a trying to eliminate the have-nots? I don't want a scenario where there's a family and they're living in poverty, and they're part of Berean, and the kids actually resent the fact that the church has done nothing to help them, knowing that We have money to spend on that room right there. We have money to spend on this or money to spend on that. And yet we're struggling as a family inside the church to have food to eat. You know, so like all of us in this room and everyone that's in the church should keep our ear to the ground so that if we know of somebody struggling like that, that we do everything we can. Because like you said, we have limited resources. We can't fix the problems within the city of Fayetteville, but surely we have enough resources.
Oh, you can finish.
I've said enough.
Oh, I was going to say, a couple of times on the prayer list, one lady said that she just got a divorce and she's looking for a job. Another family said that they were having a hard time with the additional child or something like that, so maybe we should pay attention more to specifically. I mean, like, I read it, but
I'm asking you to, if you see something like that, to raise the hand up and say, send me an email, send Mike an email, send a deacon an email and say, do we know who this is? Is there anything more we could do? Because like Jim's not here, but Jim Sebring normally comes and he sits like over here, and he put out a fact that they were starting teller, $18 an hour, no experience needed. Just $18 an hour, no experience needed. So I mean, we have connections within the church to help somebody get a job.
But I don't have the deacon's email address. Normally, you can always contact the church and we'll...
Yeah, like if you go on the church website and fill out the form there, it comes here. We respond to every one of the things that comes there. I mean, like, it's not hard to. We don't need to give you every deacon's email address. I was just saying, like, reach out to somebody is what I was saying. Church contact form. I get emails from Canada. Get emails from all over the place through that thing and engage those people. Yep.
Or just, you know, find a deacon on a Sunday morning and talk to them on Sunday morning.
Yep. All right, it is 7:48. Where are we stopping? Where are we going to engage? Let's figure that out.
4-1. We have to get chapter 4.
So we start at 4-2. 4-2. All right, 4-2. 4-2. What? Yeah, week after next. Yeah, Sabbath week is next week.